All right, turn to Proverbs 11:21. I'm going to cover two verses tonight, Lord willing. Proverbs 11:21 says, "Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered." So let's look at the first part. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. To join is to put together, to unite one thing to another in a kind of connection, physical or immaterial, to put or bring into close contact, cause to touch each other. And then it gives the phrase to join hands, and that takes us down, way down to number 19. To join hands is to fold or clasp one's hands together of two persons. It means to grasp each the hand of the other in token of amity, like friendship, or especially of marriage, which we still do that. You take the bride's hand in the marriage ceremony. And then figuratively, to join hands or to join hand in hand, which is exactly how it's used here, means to associate, to combine in some action or enterprise, to enter into alliance for some particular end. So there's probably a physical and a figurative application here, because typically when people join together and associate, they oftentimes actually physically join hands, and to do that, they're entering into some kind of an agreement. Mm-hmm. And so that's what is being spoken of here, that wicked people are entering into some kind of an association, an agreement, an alliance to do something. And since they're wicked, it's going to be something bad, probably something bad to somebody else. Wicked is bad in moral character, disposition, or conduct, inclined or addicted to willful wrongdoing, practicing or disposed to practice evil, morally depraved. And then it says that those that join hand in hand, wicked people, will not be unpunished. In other words, they will be punished. And to be punished, or to punish, is when you're speaking, it's as an act of a superior or of public authority. It's to cause an offender to suffer for an offense, to subject to judicial chastisement as retribution or requital, or as a caution against further transgression, to inflict a penalty upon. So if we put the definitions back into the verse, we see that despite the fact that evil people enter into alliances with each other to accomplish nefarious ends and help and support each other, they will be requited and judged for it by God, or possibly by civil magistrates. But they will not go unpunished, even though the whole scheme is about going unpunished. That's the whole purpose. When you make an alliance and you have a conspiracy and you do things secretly and you try to, you know, you try to get away with it, and they think that they will. There's a place in the Psalms where they think that God doesn't see. You know, they talk about that the Almighty doesn't, you know, He can't see. And the psalmist says that he that created the eye doth he not see, and created the ear doth he not hear. He sees it all. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. And God sees all that, and God hates people that do such thing, and they will be punished. We read about that in Proverbs 16 and verse 5. It says, "Everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand," though they associate, right, though they band together, pledge their allegiance to each other, "he shall not be unpunished." So the best plans that they lay are not going to end up turning out well in the end. There's a verse that I just thought about. I think it's in Isaiah. Let me just flip here. It says, "Associate yourselves, and you'll be destroyed." It really goes along with what we're talking about here. Let me just see if I can find that. I know where it is on the page. Hold on, maybe I didn't start early enough. Just a minute here.
No. I went to the little tiny
concordance. Oh, it is 8 now. I'm glad I didn't. I thought it was 8. That's why I went back to 8. I bet you in my old Bible it was on the left page on the right column, because that's where I was looking. I would have never found it. It's on the right page in the right column here. Yes, that's the verse I was thinking of. Associate yourselves, O ye people, and ye shall be broken in pieces. And give ear, all ye of far countries, gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. So, here are people that are, you know, basically what Solomon's talking about here, associating themselves together, obviously, for some bad end. And the Lord says you'll be broken in pieces. We read, if you remember way back in Proverbs chapter 1, we read about these sinners that band themselves together to kill and pillage the righteous. And Proverbs 1 teaches, and some other verses here I'll give you teach, that people that do that will end up dying by the same sword that they tried to kill others with. In Proverbs 1 and verse 10, it says, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance, we shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot among us, let us all have one purse." So he's basically talking about people doing the same thing that we're looking at in this proverb. They'll hand join in hand. We're gonna band together. We're all gonna have one purse. We're gonna share everything. Whatever loot we get, we're all gonna share it. We're gonna have, you know, just, it's gonna be all divided up equally among us. Except it probably won't be. Probably the guy that's running the show is probably gonna take a little more than everybody else gets. That's usually how that kind of thing works. "My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay wait for their own blood and lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of every one that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof." So what they don't realize is that the person that they're laying the trap for to kill is actually themselves. Now, this is not what they intend, of course, but this is what God will end up bringing to pass. They will die by the same sword that they lived by. And this is what Jesus told us in Matthew 26 and verse 52. "They shall not go unpunished." Now, how they might be punished, it could just be natural retribution. They could break into some guy's house thinking that they're going to rob him, and he may be sitting there with a gun, and there they got punished. Or the Lord could take care of them himself, other ways, or use the law, or whatever means he chooses. Matthew 26 and verse 52. "Then said Jesus unto him," this is unto Peter, after he just whacked that guy's ear off, "put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword." If you're the kind of person that likes to entertain violence and getting fights and things like that, well, then you could end up suffering a similar fate yourself. They that take the sword will die by it. And this is also taught in Revelation 13 and verse 10. It's better to do as Teddy Roosevelt said. I'm not endorsing him or anything, but he said, "Walk softly and carry a big stick." So carrying a big stick's a good idea, but swinging that stick around trying to whack everybody you come across is not a good idea. Revelation 13 and verse 10. It says, "He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints." See, this is the patience and faith of the saints. We have to have faith and wait and trust that what this verse says will happen. They that kill with the sword will be killed with the sword. They that lead into captivity will be led into captivity. In other words, they'll reap what they sow. The Lord will take care of them eventually. Although sometimes we sit here and we look and we just say, how long? How long is it going to go on? Are they ever going to be brought to justice? But it will happen someday. If not before the second coming, it'll definitely happen then. One more, Jeremiah 43 and verse 11. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. Jeremiah 43, 11. And when he cometh, he shall smite the land of Egypt and deliver such as are for death to death, and such as are for captivity to captivity, and such as are for the sword to the sword. So, someday, people that have murdered and imprisoned Christians are going to get what's coming to them. Now, let me give you a couple of examples of men that joined hand in hand to create an alliance or an association to try to do something that they weren't supposed to do and show you how that they did not go unpunished. Now, in this case, one of them was wicked and one of them wasn't wicked. He was just stupid to associate himself with somebody that's wicked. And this was King Jehoshaphat of Judah. He joined affinity with Ahab, king of Israel, to go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, against the Lord's counsel. Now, we're not going to read this whole account like we've done before, but I just want to show you that by the word here, affinity, that this is a perfect example of what Solomon's talking about, hand joining in hand. 2 Chronicles 18, 1 through 3. And both of these men did not go unpunished. One of them got punished worse than the other one, but neither of them went unpunished. Second Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 18, 1 through 3. Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance and joined affinity with Ahab. See, that's what happens whenever you get affluent, then you get cocky and you get stupid and you get lax and you join affinity with some reprobate like Ahab. And after certain years, he went down to Ahab to Samaria. And Ahab killed sheep and oxen for him in abundance, and for the people that had with him, that he had with him, and persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth-Gilead. The evil communication corrupts good manners. He should have just stayed away from Ahab, but he went down there, and there's a great big, I was going to say pig roast, but great big whatever kind of roast that they're having a big party, and he convinces him to go to war with him. And Ahab, king of Israel, said unto Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, wilt thou go with me to Ramoth-Gilead? And he answered him, I am as thou art, and my people is thy people, and we will be with thee in the war. This is after he buttered him up with all the food. Remember what it says in Proverbs about when thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart's not with thee. Right, that's it. People are buttering you up with food or wining and dining you or whatever. They're probably trying to get you to do something that you shouldn't be doing. And this is what happened with Jehoshaphat. So he goes along with him. And I kind of skipped right over the first verse there, the part that I really wanted there, where it says that Jehoshaphat had riches and honor and abundance and joined affinity with Ahab. Affinity is, the OED is breaking the cardinal rule of dictionarying, and that is you don't define a word with a word. But affinity is affinity by inclination or attraction. It's voluntary social relationship, companionship, alliance, association. And that's exactly what hand join in hand meant. Remember that? Same words were used to define that. To associate, combine in some action or enterprise, to enter into alliance for some particular end. It's exactly what it is to join affinity. So here these two men join hand in hand against what the Lord had said to do. Because remember when they finally have Micaiah come along and get his counsel after all the other 400 and some prophets had told him to go ahead with it. And he said, I did see all Israel scattered upon the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master. Let them return, therefore, every man to his house in peace. So the Lord told Jehoshaphat, don't do it. Don't go with him. But he did it anyway. And for that, the wicked did not go unpunished. Ahab was killed in battle. He was punished. Verses 33 and 34, 2 Chronicles 18, 33 and 34. You'll remember what happened here. The archer drew a bow and shot an arrow at a venture, and this is what you call providence, and it went right there, right between the joints of the harness. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Therefore he said to his chariot man, "Turn thine hand, that thou mayest carry me out of the host, for I am wounded." And the battle increased that day. Howbeit, the king of Israel stayed himself up in his chariot against the Syrians until the even. And about the time of the sun going down, he died. This is just one of the many places in the Bible which show us the Lord's providence. And there have been all kinds of things that have happened throughout history just like this, where just some guy drew an arrow and shot and just hit right in the right spot. The Lord just directed it right there. We wouldn't have the country we have today if it wasn't for the Lord's providence in the Revolutionary War, when a bullet missed George Washington's head by like an inch or something like that. One more inch over, George Washington would have been dead. The Continental Army would have surrendered probably, and we'd all be colonies of Great Britain, or would have been for a long time, or who knows what. The whole war would have been entirely different. The whole course of human events would have changed dramatically, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse, who knows. But just that one bullet missing his head by an inch. And it could have just as easily got him right in the forehead, just like this arrow did to Ahab. So it's really interesting to see how the Lord controls all these events to bring about what he wants to happen. So Ahab was punished. He got a capital punishment. He got the death penalty there. But Jehoshaphat didn't go unpunished either, because the wrath of the Lord was upon him. We read in the beginning of the next chapter in 2 Chronicles 19, 1 through 2. And Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, returned to his house in peace to Jerusalem. And Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, "Shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon thee from before the Lord." There's a lot of preaching in that verse. It reminds me of so-called Christian Zionism today. People that say that we ought to support Israel no matter what, militarily, financially, and give them this special status among all the nations of the world and all this stuff, and fight their wars for them and whatever else, and yet they hate the Lord. They hate the Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Their own writings, they make no bones about it. And if you hate the Lord Jesus Christ, you hate the Lord, you hate God. He that hath not the Son hath not the Father. And why would we love the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? And you want to know why wrath is upon this nation? Well, that might be part of it, because we wholeheartedly as a nation support people that hate the Lord. That's just a fact. So the wrath of the Lord was upon Jehoshaphat. He suffered for this. He did not go unpunished. And of all people to join affinity with, it says in the Bible that there was none like Ahab who sold himself to work wickedness. There was none like him. This man was unique in his wickedness. It was funny, I was reading back through in 1 Kings, and Ahab's dad, Omri, it said Omri did worse than all that were before him. And then when Ahab comes along, it says he did worse than all that were before him. So Omri was bad, as bad as it got, and Ahab was worse. And this is the guy that Jehoshaphat joins affinity with, strikes hands with. It's crazy, huh? But Jehoshaphat didn't even learn his lesson after that. Because after that, he joins affinity with another wicked king named Ahaziah, king of Israel, who was also a very wicked man. In 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 35. 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 35. And after this did Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, join himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel. who did very wickedly. You're thinking, what's wrong with this guy? He knows that the kings of Israel are evil wretches, and he just had this experience with Ahab. He almost got killed. Remember that he and Ahab switched clothing, and Jehoshaphat dressed up as the king of Israel, and Ahab was going to disguise himself, and they said, hey, here's the king of Israel, and they went after Jehoshaphat to kill him, and he screams, oh, it's not me, or I'm not Ahab, or whatever. So he was within just inches of death, and he's under the wrath of the Lord, and then he joins affinity with another king of Israel, who did very wickedly. Just like my grandpa said, those that don't listen have to feel. So these two join hands. They make this association to build some ships together. This is going to be a financial endeavor here. They were going to go and get themselves some gold from, I forget where it says here. We'll read about that in just a minute. But anyway, so they're going to build these ships, verse 36. And he joined himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish, and they made the ships in Ezion-Geber. But he didn't go unpunished, because God destroyed the ships before they even left the port. Verse 37, then Eliezer, the son of Dodava of Merisha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, because thou hast joined thyself with Ahaziah, the Lord hath broken thy works. And the ships were broken that they were not able to go to Tarshish. Now, if we compare this with what's said in 1 Kings 22:48, we see that they were broken right in the very port where they were built. They never even left, never had their maiden voyage, and they were totally destroyed. 1 Kings 22:48. It doesn't say what destroyed them, but I'm imagining just a real terrible storm came in and just beat those things against the shore, or tsunami or something, and totally destroyed them before they ever left. 1 Kings 22 and verse 48. Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish to go to Ophir, that's where I was thinking of, for gold. But they went not, for the ships were broken at Ezion-Geber. That's where they were built. So he was following the almighty dollar. He joined affinity with this wicked king to go make money, to go to Ophir to get gold, and the Lord broke the ships before they ever left. Then there are other examples, other times in Israel's history, that wicked nations joined together to destroy Israel, but were never able. Though hand joined in hand, the wicked should not go unpunished. And then this will bring us into the second part of the proverb. Let me just give you just a few examples here of where nations joined themselves together to try to destroy the people of God. That was Israel at that time. And show you that it never did prosper, never will. Joshua 9, 1 through 2 is the first one. This is one reason why we should be against the United Nations. Because anytime you see nations uniting in the Bible, it's usually against the people of God. And it's never a good thing. Joshua 9, 1 through 2. And it came to pass, when all the kings that were on this side Jordan in the hills and in the valleys and in all the coasts of the great sea over against Lebanon, the Hittite and the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard thereof, they gathered themselves together to fight with Joshua and with Israel with one accord, hand joined in hand. Look at all these nations there. You got all these kings there. Hittite, Amorite, Canaanite, Perizzite, Hivite, Jebusite, at least six of them, over against Lebanon. So I don't know if the Lebanese were involved in that too. But anyway, you got all these nations gathering together against the people of God. Of course, it doesn't, you know, we don't, if you just continue to read, you see it didn't work out. They weren't able to destroy them, as was the case in numerous times in Israel's history. Let's turn over to Nehemiah 4. 7 through 9. Nehemiah 4, 7 through 9. This is when they were trying to rebuild Jerusalem after it had been destroyed by the Babylonians and after that 70-year captivity. And they went back and they rebuilt in the days of Ezra. And then A lot of what they got rebuilt was destroyed again, it appears, from what we read. The walls were burned, and so Nehemiah goes back to repair the walls, and there were people from different nations that were banding together, or people anyway, banding together, trying to destroy the work of the Lord. Nehemiah 4, 7 through 9. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity, and cover not their iniquity. Am I in the right place? Wrong place? What verse am I supposed to be on? Seven. Oh, seven. There we go. I knew that didn't sound right. All right. Let's try that again. Nehemiah 4, 7. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth, very angry, and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. So they weren't able. But here you are, a bunch of united nations again, against God's church, not able to destroy it. And then let me give you one more in Psalm 83. Psalm 83. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not go unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. And this is what happened in Nehemiah's day. This is what happened to Israel in these various times in their history when men tried to destroy them. And by the way, this is what will happen at the end of time. When all the kings of the earth, when Satan gathers them all together, and they surround the camp of the saints, and then fire comes down from heaven and destroys them. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. Psalm 83, 1 through 8. Keep not thou silence, O God, hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. Hands joining hand here, they're taking counsel, they're consulting together, they're making an association. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate. That's another word for an association, right? They are confederate against thee. The tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines, and the inhabitants of Tyre. Asher also is joined with them. They have holpen the children of Lot. There's 11. I was counting on my fingers as I was reading it. 11 different nations gathering together against Israel. And obviously it didn't work. Didn't work out. They weren't able to destroy them. They weren't able to cease them from being a nation because they continued right on being a nation up until the time of the Lord Jesus Christ. So though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished. But the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. There's the second half of the proverb. A seed is offspring, progeny. This is not used this way, except in biblical phraseology it says, but this is the Bible uses it this way many times. The seed of the righteous shall be delivered. Righteous, when you're speaking of persons, is just, upright, virtuous, guiltless, sinless, conforming to the standard of the divine or the moral law, acting rightly or justly. It says the seed of the righteous shall be delivered, which is to set free, liberate, release, rescue, save. Now especially to set free from restraint, imminent danger, annoyance, trouble, or evil generally. So in other words, the offspring of a just and virtuous man who conforms himself to God's law will be saved from being harmed by the wicked who band together against him. So there is blessing that goes down upon the children of faithful saints because it says the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. There were times where the Lord didn't destroy Israel or Judah because of the faithfulness of their fathers. Because of David, he didn't destroy. He mentions that different times in the king. Because of David, he wouldn't destroy them. So the seed of the righteous is sometimes delivered because of the righteous. Lot was delivered because of Abraham. He wasn't exactly Abraham's seed, but he was his nephew, right? He was associated with Abraham. So there are times when God will see the faithfulness of parents and spare the children because of that.
Are you talking about the imputed righteousness or righteousness by work?
Oh, both. Both. Specifically, the righteousness by work, practical righteousness. That's what God rewards temporally in this life.
Even though Lot did this and that back then, the Lord still sees.
Yeah, well, Lot, I think a lot of Lot's deliverance was because of Abraham. Even though Lot was a righteous man by imputation of Christ, Lot was practically not all that righteous. But there is another way that this can be understood also, because when it says the seed of the righteous shall be delivered, the children of God are the seed of Jesus Christ, who is the righteous. So in this way, the seed of the righteous, of Jesus Christ the righteous, will be delivered from those who try to destroy them. Let me just show you that the children of God are the seed of Jesus Christ. Isaiah 53 and verse 10. Isaiah 53:10. This is the prophecy of the sufferings of Christ for his people. It says, "Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed. He shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see his seed," his progeny, his children. Now, he didn't have any physical children, but he had children by adoption. That's one of the reasons why. I'll get to the verse that I'm going to, but if you just turn back, well, a number of chapters in Isaiah, back to chapter 9, this is why Jesus is called the Everlasting Father. Isaiah 9 and verse 6. "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." He's the Son, and he's also the Father. He's the Son of God. He's the father of his children by adoption, because God gave those children to him. He said, "All that the Father giveth me shall come to me. Him that cometh to me, I will in no wise cast out." Well, if somebody gives you a child to raise for them, what does that make you? A father, by adoption, right? A foster father or something. So Jesus, that's why he's called the Everlasting Father, because he was given children. Let's look at Hebrews 2 and verse 13. Hebrews 2, 13. And again, he's quoting here from the Psalms. No, he's not quoting from the Psalms. The first part was quoting from the Psalms. Here he's quoting from 2 Samuel, I think. And then Isaiah 8, 18. "And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me." So this is a prophecy of Christ. You look in the context here. It's very obvious that it's talking about Christ. And it says there that God had given him children. So they are his seed. And remember, it says the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. And Jesus Christ is called the righteous in 1 John 2 and verse 1. 1 John 2 and verse 1. My little children, these things write I unto you, that ye sin not. And if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous. He's also called in another place, the just. And the righteous and the just be the same thing, because a righteous person is just. That's primary definition, just, upright, virtuous, guiltless. So Jesus Christ is the righteous. So the seed of the righteous, that is Jesus' children, will be delivered when the wicked join hand in hand to try to destroy them. Like we've read of some examples there in the book of Revelation at the end of time that I mentioned, right? The wicked join hand in hand, try to destroy the children of God, and the seed of the righteous are delivered. Let's look at some examples of that. Psalm 37, 9 through 11. Of the Lord delivering the children of God. Psalm 37, 9 through 11. For evildoers shall be cut off, right? The wicked shall not go unpunished. But those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. The seed of the righteous shall be delivered, right? For yet a little while, and the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The seed of the wicked shall be delivered. Someday we're going to look up some of these wicked people in the phone book, and we're just not going to find them anymore. They're going to be gone. They're going to be gone.
Is it Proverbs 2, the wicked shall be cut off from the earth and the transgressors? Righteous shall dwell in the land, or the perfect shall remain in it.
And the transgressors shall be rooted out of it.
Yeah, so yep. I guess it doesn't really say you can't find them, but they won't be in the land.
They're going to be gone. Just jump down here. There's a few verses here in Psalm 37, and verses 32 and 33, the wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him. Right? They're joined hand in hand, but they're not going to go unpunished. The Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged. Wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt thee to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. The seed of the righteous shall be delivered. And then down in verses 39 and 40, but the salvation of the righteous is of the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble, and the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. Right? It says he shall deliver them. It says it twice there. The seed of the righteous shall be delivered. The wicked shall not be unpunished. And now let's get to the verse that I forgot that I put in the outline that I've mentioned twice already. And that is, at the end of time, Satan will gather all the nations together against the camp of the saints, but they shall be delivered, and the wicked will be punished. And punished they will be severely. Revelation 28 through 10. Let's just back up. Verse 7, and when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints. See, hand joined in hand here. They're compassing the saints. They're all banded together and think they're going to destroy them. They've been planning, Satan's been planning this for 6,000 years. And he thinks he's finally got them. I mean, over and over again, Satan tried to destroy the seed of Jesus Christ. He tried to, he had almost completely eradicated the whole seed line, except for Joash, the one little baby boy. Mm-hmm. So many different times the Lord tried to do it, Satan tried to do it, and the Lord never allowed him to do it. And then Satan's tried to build these empires, one after another, Egypt and Assyria and Babylon and the Medes and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans, and the Lord just kept breaking them all. He shattered the Roman Empire to a million pieces, and Satan keeps trying to build it up all these years, thousands of years. And he finally gets all the kings of the earth banded together. They all join hand in hand. They surround the camp of the saints. And he's finally got them. It's finally over. He just needs to snuff them out. And now Satan can be God. And fire comes down from heaven and destroys them all. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about in the beloved city, and fire came down from heaven out of God and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and they shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Now talk about the wicked shall not be unpunished. Tormented day and night forever and ever. I would say that would fit the definition of not being unpunished. That's what you call everlasting punishment. Verse 15, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So the seed of the righteous is delivered, the wicked are punished. And I'll take care of that verse, and probably that'll... Yeah, we're going to call it quits for tonight, because the next verse... It'll take a little bit of time, and then the one after that's not all that long, so I might be able to cover both of them next time. We'll see. So thanks for your kind and patient attention.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.